Live Creative Now, episode 66.
Welcome to Live Creative Now with Melissa Dinwiddie, a weekly podcast to inspire you to create your art and share your work, because that's how you will change the world.
Hello, hello, hello. I am Melissa Dinwiddie, passion pluralite artist, happiness catalyst, and creativity instigator, here to address all your questions about living a full-color creative life. Whether you think of yourself as not artistic, not creative, or you think of yourself as an artist of any kind, writer, visual, artist, musician, whatever, or anything in between, no matter how you define yourself, feeding your creative hungers makes you feel more alive. And it's how you change the world. First by changing yourself and your mood and your state, and that ripples out. Change one small thing, and guess what? You have changed the world. My last episode, episode 64, was a listener question episode in which I answered the question from a listener that pretty much boiled down to, how can I let myself play and make crap when crap won't sell? And I will get a big I told you so from the people in my life. So if you've ever had that question yourself, or if that resonates with you at all, check out episode 64 at livecreativenow.com/064. Today, I want to talk about a subject that I've written a lot about over the years, which is the tension between the pursuit of excellence or mastery and the pursuit of happiness. This tension has been on my mind this week because lately I have been kind of lax in my commitment to work out. So to back up and give you a little background, almost a year ago, I think it was August 31st, 2015, I started doing these online turbo fire workouts through Beachbody.com. And I was super excited to have found something that I could actually get myself to do that I kind of enjoyed. I didn't have to drive to a gym, you know. I had really been wanting to get into better shape for a long time. I mean, I used to be a dancer and a yogini, and I hadn't really been doing a lot. I do have a treadmill desk, so I do get some walking in just about every day, but I wanted more. I wanted to be more fit and healthy, and I know exercise is one of the absolute best things you can do for your brain, for your willpower, for creativity, for longevity, for quality of life, for mood, everything. And I was super excited that I found something that seemed like it actually fit into my life. So I committed to following the TurboFire 20-week calendar, 6 days a week for 20 weeks. Now, I didn't always stick exactly to the program, and there were certainly days that I missed during those 20 weeks, but for the most part, I was pretty consistent and it paid off, and I kept it up. After those 20 weeks, I have been working out. My aim is 6 days a week. Sometimes it's more like five, but recently I've been kind of bummed out because I thought I had finally figured out how to build workouts into my days. And I thought I had, I thought I was basically going to have a daily workout habit, or, you know, almost daily workout habit from now on. Boom, got it done. And I even had dreams of getting that flat belly that I've always wanted, which has been definitely out of reach since my metabolism has slowed down as I've gotten older. And well, that flat belly didn't happen even when I was, you know, really in it 6 days a week. And I have to admit that my commitment lately has kind of flailed. Now, part of the issue is that when I first started with the workouts, I realized pretty quickly that, as I say, the thing you do first is the thing that gets done. So I was doing the workouts in the morning to make sure that they got done. But ultimately, I moved them to later in the day because I wanted to reclaim that morning time for creative stuff. And for a while, that was working. But the problem is, if I don't start a workout before my husband gets home, then it is almost impossible to make it happen. And I haven't been getting workouts started before he gets home. So yeah, it just hasn't been happening. The reason that it hasn't been happening is because other things have been feeling more important, like making videos for my calligraphy how-to Instagram feed at calligraphy how-to on Instagram. So I've let that take priority. So when it gets to the, 4:30 in the afternoon, 5 o'clock, whatever, I start working on a video instead of going downstairs and starting a workout. So here's the thing. As much as I would love to celebrate my upcoming 50th birthday, I can't believe it. I can't believe I'm going to be a half century old. I'd love to celebrate my 50th birthday this November with the fittest body I have ever had. I don't think my commitment level is there. I don't think that I am really willing to make the kinds of sacrifices in other areas of my life that I would have to make in order to get those washboard abs that I would really love to have. And here's the thing, I'm actually okay with that. So what does all this have to do with living a full color creative life? I mean, yeah, working out, helps you be in better shape and helps you mentally so that you can be more creative, but it's kind of tangential, right? Well, here's the thing. In my Creative Sandbox community, which you can read all about at creativesandboxcommunity.com, we have a private Facebook group. And inside the community, we have some accountability threads. And one of them is a workout accountability thread, because there's other people in there, not just me, who want some help getting ourselves to move more throughout the day, right? To get some exercise in, whatever that looks like. And so we use that thread for sharing, this is what I'm going to do. This is what I commit to. This is where I stumbled, whatever, getting support, encouragement, accountability, and everything. And the other day I shared the following. I'm going to read what I wrote. I wrote, "It's so challenging to keep up with any given commitment when you have so many things that are competing to be top priority. Also," I wrote, "I have to keep reminding myself that health and fitness are the real reason for working out. It's very easy for me to slip into wanting to do it for purely aesthetic reasons. Lose the belly, slim down, muscle up. When appearance becomes the focus, nothing good results, as it sends me into old unhealthy patterns, residual from my bulimic days. I'm grateful that I can keep returning my focus to what's really important: health, wellness, a full color life, good relationships." So yeah, I had close to a decade where I really struggled with bulimia, and that came from this, this focus not being on authentic desires and needs, but on external, like on appearance, and this feeling that only if I were super thin and, really beautiful would I be worthy and lovable. Oh my goodness. And there goes my parents' dog. We're dog sitting right now. Hopefully she'll quiet down soon. Oh, probably an Amazon delivery or something. Anyway, so that's what I wrote. And somebody in the sandbox replied, "Great observations, Melissa. There's often only a fine line between health-promoting habits and unhealthy patterns. And sometimes I'm concerned when people seem to be unable to see this." Bingo. Bingo. That is the question. Where is the line between a healthy commitment and unhealthy obsession? Where is the line between discipline that brings rewards and discipline that sucks the joy out of your life? Now, I used to think that mastery, that being the best or among the best, say being world class, that would lead to happiness. If only I were a world class dancer, or a world-class calligrapher or a world-class jazz singer, then I'd be happy. That was my thinking. But if I dig a little bit deeper, what was I really seeking? What did I think that being world-class would give me? And if I really dissect it, I think that what I really wanted was to be loved, to feel worthy and lovable, to feel enough. But the route that I was taking to try and get there, becoming world class, was that actually going to get me there? If I think about it, being world class at something, being like phenomenally, remarkably great at something, it certainly gets a lot of admiration and also envy, but I don't know about close human connections. I don't think that it directly automatically leads to that. So necessarily. So while it felt to me that being world class would finally validate me and make me feel enough, it's kind of like eating a bird for its song. It's not actually a useful tactic for achieving the underlying goal. Now, nowadays, I am quite sure that I have way much less of a chance to become world class at anything that I do than I did when I was so intensely focused on that goal. You know, it takes drive and commitment and grit and dedication and willingness to sacrifice in order to become world class at something. I mean, think of Olympic athletes. Think of like the greatest musicians in the world. They lock themselves in a closet and practice 8 hours a day, right? Olympic athletes give up a lot in order to get to the Olympics. And back when I was a teenager, I gave up a lot to dance because it felt worth it to me at the time. And I would have given everything to dance at the level that I aspired to. It was so important to me that I dropped out of UC Berkeley, flew to New York City, and auditioned for Juilliard. And when I got injured during my year there and I couldn't dance, my sole focus was getting well enough to dance again. And in fact, for 5 years, I was on the quest for the miracle cure. And I remember it was so clear in my head that I did not care if I could never walk again, if I could never walk without pain again, or even never walk again, period, if only I could dance again. I didn't care if I could never walk, if I could never go on hikes or anything like that, never walk around the block with a sweetheart, if only I could dance again. Now I look at that from this perspective and I wouldn't make that trade. So this sense of success, of external success, external validation and mastery were more important to me back then than happiness, because in my mind, they were what would bring me happiness. And now, the year I'm going to turn 50, things have shifted so far in the other direction. In fact, I often think my younger self would look at me in disgust and say that I've settled, right? And in a sense, she'd be right, because I am no longer willing to make my life miserable in the pursuit of excellence. So yeah, I'm never going to achieve the levels of excellence that I would really love to, I dream about, right? And yet, I am so much happier now than I was back then. Now, I haven't given up on the pursuit of excellence. I am a very driven person, and I am always going to pursue excellence. That's just wired into me. I think I don't know if it's genetics or what it is, but I'm definitely wired to be driven. But I have gotten clearer about which sacrifices I'm willing to make and which sacrifices I'm not willing to make. And most importantly, I've gotten clear about what I'm really seeking underneath it all. instead of seeking enoughness through impressing other people, which I confess that is really what I used to do. I have a much more solid grasp on my own enoughness as I am in all of my imperfections. And this allows me to share a lot more freely because I don't feel like I have to wait until something is perfect in order to share it. Because I now understand that the imperfection of what I create, whatever it is, doesn't take away from my value as a human being. The imperfection of what I create doesn't take away from my value as a human being. And the only way that I've gotten to this place of understanding that is through practicing self-compassion and imperfectionism very intentionally for the past, I don't even know how many, handful of years. I've really made an effort to allow myself to be imperfect, to forgive myself for being human, to practice self-compassion. So I no longer feel that I will only achieve enoughness when I achieve world-class mastery and excellence. I've come to accept myself as enough right now, even though I'm also still striving for excellence. It's an interesting place to be, sort of this, I don't know if it's Zen or what it is, but I can accept who I am, where I am right now, while also always striving to improve. The key point is that my worthiness as a human being doesn't depend on how amazingly skilled I am. That's true for all of us. It's who I bring to the table that really matters, how myself I am, not what impressive things I can do to wow people, right? Or how flat and ripped my belly is. Thank God, because it's probably never going to be flat and ripped. Oh, so sad. Anyway, that is what I have to say today. Kind of rambly. I hope there was something in there for you that's useful for you. And now I am going to go get a workout before my husband comes home. Oh, God. That's it. That's a wrap. Thank you so much for joining me today. If you're getting value out of this podcast, the best way to thank me is to tell your friends and leave a 5-star review over on iTunes. I have step-by-step instructions for how to leave a review on iTunes. Make sure to leave a 5-star rating. Of course, I hope it's a 5-star, and an actual review with words, even a sentence. It just makes such a difference. It helps other people find the podcast, and it really means a lot to me. You can get step-by-step instructions on how to do that at livecreativenow.com/iTunes-review. Meanwhile, I have one space left at my Create and Incubate retreat, and I would so love it if that is calling to you. I would so love to have you there. It's 5 days, 4 nights in the beautiful hills above Silicon Valley in Los Gatos, California, from August 17th through 21st. And it is 5 days of uninterrupted create time. We all know how hard it is to stay focused on your creative thing when you also have to deal with laundry and cooking and emails and phone calls and errands and driving the kids to soccer and on and on and on, which is why it is so incredibly valuable to go on a creative retreat. And at Create and Incubate Retreat, it is all taken care of for you. Meals, 3 meals a day, a place to stay, dedicated workspace at a table in our incubator room. It's going to be a small, intimate group. Each person will be working on whatever they want to work on. There's no phones to answer, no laundry, no cooking because the meals are prepared. And there's something so magical when you get together in a room with a group of other creators where everyone's immersed in their own creativity. Everybody's focused on what they're doing. There's something so powerful to me about that. And everyone I talk to who's been on this retreat says the same thing. It's like this special buzz of energy. It just like ramps up everybody's creative power to turbo. It's so incredibly energizing. And you just get so much done. And besides, it's just so great to get together with other awesome, open-hearted, generous, lovely, creative people. And we laugh like crazy. We laugh so much. These retreats fuel my well for months, which is why I have made it a priority to go to retreats like this and to host retreats like this. Honestly, it's not a moneymaker for me. It's something I do because it's really important to me. So if you would like to recharge your commitment to your creative spirit and fill your tank with a reserve of energy to propel you through the year and just get so much done on whatever creative project you've been wanting to get to, and you'd like to do it in a cozy, beautiful setting with support and guidance and just the right amount of structure from someone you trust, namely me, I would love for you to join me. And you can do that. Grab that last spot, one spot left. You can get it at createandincubateretreat.com. That's createandincubateretreat.com. I would love to have you there. That's it. Until next time, thanks so much again for joining me, and go get creating.
Live creative now.
Subscribe at livecreativenow.com.